the editing nature of it. 2 minutes, like you said, for 2 minutes you should have been able to do better than that. But it's not like it's filming, it turned into sort of a blooper reel, he says. So thank you so much for sending us over and helping us to be able to connect with the founders a little more closely and see what God is doing over there, learning their heart and what God is placing before them that way, and just seeing the impact that God is making in Berlin through the Picanados and their heart for the city and the people there. It's been really amazing, so thank you for that. We thought it would be nice for each of us to share a little bit about something that impacted us in Berlin and just in the trip in general. So we're each going to share a little bit. Tyus is going to give a pass this time, but maybe next time. I don't know. We'll see. So I'm going to have Addie go first because she is a brave young woman. I'm going to get you a microphone here. Hang on a second. Okay, so one of her favorite things that she got to see was this character right here, all over the city of East Berlin. You want to tell them a little bit about who this person is?
Oh.
That's my first actor. Ampelmann. And what does Ampelmann do? So he tells people when to go across the street. So these are the pedestrian light signals at the crossing street, or walk signals and stop signals. There's a stop. So they don't have walk and don't walk like we do have here in the city, in the States, or stickmen. They have these Ampelmann. And it was designed by a guy who was a psychologist, actually, early on. And they wanted to have something that was both visually exciting and kind of unique, and so he created this Ampelmann character to help people obey what? The rules. To help people obey the rules and keep people... Why do they want people to obey the rules when they're crossing the street? Safe. Absolutely. He wanted people to be safe when they cross the street. And so he created these things, and there's a picture of them in action. Stop and go, and so it's important. Addie thought she was really excited. I didn't follow her, and she busted me out. And I said, "It's red, man. It's red on one. Don't go." And it's important to follow the rules, isn't it? And so she had this verse from 1 John that she would like to share about that.
And by this we know that we have come to know Him if we keep His commandments.
Keep His commandments. And so it's important to follow God and keep His commandments because He wants to keep us safe. He wants the best for our lives too, right? Absolutely. So that's what people would add. Thank you. Thank you for that. Megan's going to share a little bit about it too.
Okay, Nate told the art teacher that she could only have like 3-4 minutes. Goodbye.
I say 5 to 10.
Oh boy. Awesome. Here we go. It's amazing. I was immersed in artwork everywhere. It was a dream come true. Everywhere there was art, and there were artists, and there was opportunity to do art and talk about art, and it was art, along with prayer. We visited many, many, many museums. We, do you want to hold that up for me? Can you stand in front of me and hold that up for me? Thank you. We visited many, many museums. We were able to talk to actual professional artists. Alyssa and I went for a walk to an art supply store one night, and around the corner, around the corner of their apartment, there lived an artist named Christina. And we actually got to see her work at one of the old churches turned into a gallery. And she's a wonderful lady. I grew up in East Berlin. And it was an interesting conversation with just about everybody we met, everyone knew about politics. Everybody wanted to know about Trump. Everybody wanted to know about what was going on in the United States. Not just her, but also Yulia, as well, wanted to talk politics, as well as Isabella, their curator, wanted to talk politics, as well as an artist and Christian wanted to talk politics. Everybody wanted to talk politics. And the one thing that I found that was interesting, and those who've been in Germany can definitely correct me if I'm wrong, it's just an overall feeling I got after coming back, was that there was a sense of spiritual warfare going on. You could see it in the modern art. You could see it in Christina's designs. You could see it in Monet's designs. You could see it in Christian's designs. You could see it all over the place. This particular place, or this particular painting was done by Yulia, and it's called Shield. And during her discussion, she talked about how it wasn't about fighting back and forth and how they were attacking the viewer, but that the viewer actually had the power and they were protecting themselves from the viewer. And I thought this was particularly interesting as the topic of power, the topic of fear, the topic of evil continued to come up in many conversations with the artist. And thus, it made me wonder, what is it that they're missing? In being kind of a dark country, we all know what they're missing. What were they missing? Jesus, yeah! The idea that with all the memorials around, evil had come to Berlin. They had seen evil firsthand. And it seemed like they were just waiting for it to happen again. With all the talks of power, with all the talks of politics, with all the talks of everything else, it felt to me that they were just continually waiting for it to happen again, and to remember, which is wonderful to be of God and to remember, but it made me realize that they didn't have that peace. That yes, we need to be on guard, but having Jesus in our life means that we have that peace, that we have that knowledge that he is protecting us, that he is the ultimate power, and that we can go to sleep at night knowing that he's got us, and that if evil does come, when evil does come, that he is able to protect us and fight for us, fight spiritually for us, fight physically for us when he comes back. And the joy that comes from that, I found missing, and I found them wanting. It seemed like that they were all wanting that protection, that help, and within all these conversations and these words. And so it reminded me of a couple different verses. One came from, is it 1 Timothy or 2 Timothy? 1 Timothy? Okay. For this reason, I remind you to fan into the flame the gift of God, which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God gave us the spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. And the other verses remind me of our women's Bible study on the armor of God, putting on that armor of God. Not necessarily out of fear, but of going into battle with God and being able to fight against that evil instead of being afraid of it coming or worried about it coming or foreboding of it coming. And then in the end, like Nate said, I got the bug, and I couldn't wait to be able to do some kind of art. And so Alyssa and I got up early one morning and took the trains over to an area where there were some manhole covers. And on the manhole covers, they were all these awesome places in Berlin, like the TV tower and churches and governmental buildings, and it even said Berlin on it. And we decided, well, what would be kind of the fastest, most efficient way to do an art project rather than painting, waiting for it to dry, et cetera, and so forth, was to do a print. And so Addie's kind of holding up as high as she possibly can one of the prints we did with the flags of the colors of the German flags, so with the black, the red, and the gold. So you might not be able to see as well, but we'll set it back there. And we just spent the morning talking, praying, doing this rubbing, getting really excited about actually doing art, talking with people that came around and said, oh, what are you doing? And oh, more politics. Oh, all right. A few people gave some few choice opinions, and I could tell what they were, even though they were in German, what they thought about American politics. But everybody was so friendly and so kind to us as we were working. And so my heart is definitely for German artists, German people of Berlin, and how God is going to save them, and how Jesus is going to love them, and pray that they would actually reach out and accept that peace. and accept that love and accept that you have to fight that spiritual warfare back.
So in many ways, when we were there in Berlin, we did feel like tourists on vacation. I mean, the Pecanados were such great hosts and tour guides. We got to see so much of the city in so little time. It was amazing. But in spite of all the sightseeing, and probably in part because of the sightseeing, we really got a sense for the city, for people there in Berlin. For Mike and Alyssa's heart, for the people and for the city itself, and also the work that God has put before them, for the Pecanados. So one of the more amazing sights that we got to see while we were there was this. This is the Ishtar Gate, and it's from the city of Babylon, if you can imagine that. This thing was built in Babylon in around 575 B.C. It's a pretty amazing thing, and there's no worldly way to get a good picture of this thing in this room. It just really dwarfs it. So King Nebuchadnezzar had this gate built for the goddess of Ishtar and to glorify her. But it's also mentioned in the Bible. It's not necessarily this gate, but the gates of Babylon are. Jeremiah, for example, speaks of the broad walls of Babylon and her high gates. And this thing is 50 feet tall in that room. And this is actually it's not even the whole gate. This is like the front entry part of the whole gate. They couldn't fit the whole thing in the room. And so a model of what it would look like is more like that. So you see the little front part? That's the 50-foot tall part. And behind it is the big part of the gate. So you can imagine how immense this thing was. Both Isaiah and Daniel make incidental references to the gates as well, calling the great city of Babylon with her broad walls and great high gates. 2,600 years ago, they wrote these things. And yet, in that time, just as the prophets said in God's word, Babylon completely disappeared. The only trace of it for 2,000 years was its mention in the Bible, and also by a Greek historian by the name of Herodotus. Because of that, because there was no trace of Babylon for 2,000 years, Herodotus was called a fool and unreliable, and the Bible was called a dream, a fairy tale, because it talked about Babylon, and there was just nothing of Babylon for 2,000 years. There's no trace of it until the end of the 19th century, when they started to discover it. And so, just like the Bible had said, that great civilization that had made something like that was gone, just buried, no trace. Isaiah 14 says, "I will rise up against them, declares the Lord of hosts, and I will cut off from Babylon name and remnant, descendants and posterity, declares the Lord. And I will make it a possession of the hedgehog and pools of water, and I will sweep it with the broom of destruction, declares the Lord of hosts." And in chapter 13 of Isaiah, it says, "And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the splendor and pomp of the Chaldeans, will be like Sodom and Gomorrah when God overthrew them. It will never be inhabited or lived in for all generations. No Arab will pitch his tent there, nor shepherds will make their flocks lie down there." It's pretty amazing to look at that picture and see that was all swept away, gone, just like God said. It's a pretty amazing evidence. Jeremiah 50 and 51 also speak to the destruction of Babylon, and it went just that way. See, these gates, when they found them, if you go back to that picture, the first one or whichever one, these gates were found under 70 feet of mud and sand. That's how deep they were. There was three separate walls that they found of varying widths, from 12 to 25 feet thick. Over 58 million bricks went into this thing. Just the gate walls, it's just amazing. A guy by the name of Robert Coldaway found it, and he began excavating it in 1902. And he made some reproduction parts of those that were lost or destroyed in his process to finish that gate. And so that gate in Berlin, that is in the Pergamon Museum, and it actually has pieces of the original Ishtar Gate in that one. There's a complete reproduction where Babylon was now in Iraq, but this one actually has pieces of the original, and then some reproduction parts to make it complete. So within 50 years, though, of his discovering and excavating and pulling out all those bricks, within 50 years of that, the desert was already starting to cover Babylon back up. Nature was clawing it back down to its grave, and so it was burying it once again. It's just amazing to see how that goes. It's an interesting picture of how our desire is to build something of significance and something that lasts, and yet God's power to do as he wishes, and that he has the ultimate say. The people of Berlin are not exempt from that. Well, the Picanatos are facing some unique challenges in post-Christian Europe and Germany there. They're working to build a people. They're hoping to build a people, not a place, because there are plenty of places in Berlin. Places all over. I mean, churches are all over that city. There's churches everywhere you look. I'm not sure there was a block we were on that there wasn't a church at one time. But these churches are all either empty or repurposed or just not being used. They're dead. The building where Bonhoeffer was ordained, this not even that long ago, really. This church is now an art gallery, and which, you know, this art gallery is perfect, purposely exploring the intersection of art and religion and how those things meet. And so that's beautiful, that's neat, but it's not necessarily the purpose of the church, is it? And they're not doing that to fulfill the purposes of the church either. They're doing it for the purposes of art. And again, it's interesting and it's beautiful, but that's not the church's realized purpose. And so Berlin doesn't need more places. They need more community. And so the Picanatos aren't trying to build more places. They aren't in a hurry to have a place or to build a church, but they want to have a people, a community that loves the Lord and is living that out in their lives day to day, as so that they review the glory of God through the way that they live. And so, in the first 4.5 years of their time over there, they've been building relationships in a number of ways. The art gallery, the Freiraum, which has got some community activity, art classes, and then the language cafe for the Syrian refugees and things like that. And as you read in the prayer letter before we left, some of how they're doing those things is going to have to change. Because the church that they're partnering with, which is right across the road from the gallery, on Auguststrasse, that's where it's kind of like the art community street down there, one of those little hole in the walls that way. But the church that they're partnering with is actually not renewing their lease with that church building anymore. So they're going to be meeting somewhere else, and they won't be needing the Berliner Freiraum space. And so they've been paying a quarter of the lease fee for this gallery to the Berliner Freiraum space that the Picanatos are leasing. And so with that money gone, that tips the scales enough for them to feel like it's just not a sustainable effort to put that much money into one little place, and they're going to try and refigure how they're going to do things up there. And so that could be a huge prayer emphasis for the Picanatos in the next year and a half, if you would join them in prayer on that. How that new structure will take place. They're still wanting to hold some gallery events, so they're hoping to rent some space to have about 4 gallery shows a year. And so they're really hoping to do that still, but they're not sure how that's going to look. They're thinking about doing church as like what's known as the simple church model, where there's small house church groups, 4 or 5 or 6 or however many there are, and then meet together once a month. So these house churches meet weekly or even a couple times a week, and then once a month they get together and meet as a larger group. But none of that is set in stone yet, so please be in prayer for them as they search that out and working with a couple of other families to make that happen. So let's see. So there are several opportunities to partner with them in action over the next couple of years as well. And those things for us arrange in things like helping them to facilitate a field forum. So they have a field forum where they go and get training and learning and encouragement and things like that. So we could help by providing some child care for them, or even providing that training and trying to help host that for them. Or possibly we could do something along the lines of hosting an artist in residence for a few months here in Watertown. So they know all these artists, and these artists love to travel and see new places. And so we hosted an artist in residence here in Watertown, and gave them a place to stay and a place to show their artwork and things like that. That would be an opportunity to partner with them as well. So these things are going to need prayer and time to search out before God, where He's gifting and where He's leading them. Another way we could partner with them in prayer is to pray for the people and the connections that they made and that they've begun. Because their time before their home assignment is coming to a short time there. They're going to come home on home assignment in April. And so just a few more months before they close down the gallery and Berliner Fry Room, the shop anyway, they'll still be operating, but the shop part. And so some of those folks are a couple of couples, Matt and Angela. Alyssa and met Angela in the park when they were walking their dog Ringo. And she just on a whim decided to ask her about the possibility of doing some language share and teaching that way. And Angela was very excited about that. And so she's actually now helping out at the language cafe on Thursday nights, which is pretty cool. Angela is a German native who is open to learning about God, even though she has kind of a traditional idea of what church is like, having grown up in Germany. Matt is an accomplished violinist. He was born in Arkansas and lived kind of in the south and the east. He's been hurt by the church, and so he's a little bit apprehensive about the church as an institution, but he knows that there are probably some people that have some real good qualities. So he's not not really abrasive, but he tests you pretty quick, you know, in conversation about where do you stand on some things. And so that was Matt and Angela. Tobias and Amanda. Tobias is a German native who is theologically trained, but he's working with a software company over there now, designing some spreadsheet stuff for large corporations, banks, and things like that. And so he's far more interested in serious people of faith than people who are very shallow and say, you know, I believe in God, but it doesn't really affect my life outside of going to church once a week or anything like that. They don't allow room for God to work in their lives. Amanda grew up in Montana in a believing family, and she helps with the kids in the Sunday schools once a month at the church. Mahmoud is a Syrian refugee, and we got to meet Mahmoud while we were there. He's in his early 20s. He arrived in Germany about 5 months ago. He doesn't have any family in Germany. He was actually headed to somewhere in South America, and when they were in this holding camp, they heard that there was some more leniency if they went to Germany instead of where they were headed. And so he quickly jumped camps and went over to Germany, even though they had no family over there. And so his goal right now is to pass his language test so that he can attend university and get a skill. He'd love to find an apartment of his own. Right now he's living in a hotel, which is actually a better spot than many of the refugees. A lot of them are living in a gymnasium, at a couple of different gymnasiums. But he's pretty exhausted right now from all the searching process for the apartments and language classes and trying to study hard for the upcoming tests. Now, if you can imagine those two couples, Tobias and Amanda and Matt and Angela, and then Mahmoud and the Picanatos and all the children of those couples and the Picanatos kids and the Yoders, and we're all sitting around a Thanksgiving dinner table. That was a pretty amazing time. That was one of my favorite time, Father, to be honest with you. We had a traditional Thanksgiving meal hosted by the Picanatos, but it was with a huge, different culture than we'd ever had that opportunity. And it was just a really good time. A lot of barriers broken down. Even though there were some language barriers and things, there was a lot of barriers that were broken down. It was a really neat experience. I could see the nervousness, especially of Mahmoud, when we began. You know, he had never even met this Christian before, let alone had a Thanksgiving meal. He didn't even know what Thanksgiving was. And here he is sitting down to a meal with all these Christians. And they were not Muslim like he was. And so it was fun to see that nervousness subside by the time that he was ready to say his goodbyes. We even were able to hug him and send greetings along. It was a neat experience. We also met Jairus, who runs the Lighthouse. And this is CMA's work directly with the refugees, kind of a full-time deal. So there's an apartment there, showers, there's language classes, there's help filling out their paperwork and language tests and studying for those things. So, you know, Picanatos do a language cafe on Thursdays, but these guys are doing all this stuff week long, every day, day in and day out. And this is out actually in West Berlin. There's a short-term apartment there, like I said, and Jairus' wife, actually, she just joined him the week we were there. He'd been there for 3 months, something like that, and she was just able to come up from South America and join, what's that? From Brazil. And so her paperwork has been a little slow, and that's why she couldn't join him as fast as he was able to get up there. But it's still got some hurdles to cross. So he's praying for his wife. What is his wife's name? I put you on the spot. I don't remember either. Okay, so Jairus' wife. So we're praying that her paperwork will continue to go through. And then we also met Christian Bodenhagen. He's one of the artists that is, presented in one of the galleries in our gallery too, one of the times, I think probably about 4 months ago. You might have seen you connected with the Facebook via some of the architectural drawings and things like that. That was a lot of his work. He's an artist and social justice warrior. He primarily does the architecture and urban art, but he has a whole wide repertoire as well. We actually purchased one of his small prints and it's hanging in my office, so it's kind of fun. I like the colors and I like the architecture stuff, so it's good. And we met Isabella. Megan mentioned her too. She is the curator at Gallery 2. Not a believer. Very outspoken. She loves her work though, and she's good at it. She's actually she's one of those I gotta commit all in kind of people. She actually works for a percentage of the sales of each show, and they only do about 6-7 shows a year in the gallery, and she doesn't have any other job. And so she is all in as an artist, and it's interesting to see her work there. She'd call herself a Buddhist, but she doesn't adhere to even all of that, because even by her own admission, because her construct is even more secular humanist than that. Now, like I said, they hope to rent space for 4 shows a year after they close the gallery, but that will leave even less work for her, and no work for her while they're gone, really, because you might be in the gallerist, there won't be any shows while they're on home assignment for that year, and so be praying for her, too, for a way to earn money, a way to stay connected with the Picanatos and keep building that relationship, a way to continue her love for art, and that the gallery will be drawing her close to him. And teaching her new things as we go. But all these people are people that God put in the Picanatos' path in their years as they sought his direction and simply went on in obedience to him. And after seeing the sights of Berlin and getting to meet some of the people of Berlin as well as getting to know the Picanatos a little better, the theme seems to continually come up for me that I've seen is that love trumps knowledge. And I know that trumps word is a whole different thing. We don't want to go into that. But love trumps. It defeats knowledge, right? It defeats knowledge, especially when it comes to evangelizing a post-Christian people. They would never have had the opportunity to get close to any one of these individuals if they did not love them. They could have come in and said, hey, did you hear about Jesus? And they might have had some success. But none of these people, having talked to them, would have given them an audience for more than 2 seconds. They would come in that way. They're demonstrating their love for them, finding out what makes them tick, and building that relationship so that they can have that relational bridge that we've talked about even that's built strong enough to share and bear the weight of the gospel. Because the gospel is heavy. It is. It sure is. Mike and Melissa can speak to each of those people and tell them all that they know, but it wouldn't amount to anything without that. So this is kind of like them being Paul at the Areopagus when he was talking to those theologians and the really aristocratic people in Acts 17. And because of how he lived and his Jesus-centric message, they actually asked him to share his message to them. They wanted to know and find out about who he was because of his genuineness, his upfrontness, and his love, his demonstrative love. And so they sought him about his faith. And after they listened, there were some people that mocked him. They made fun of him after they heard, oh, that's just hogwash. But there were some people that wanted to hear more and wanted to think about it for some time. And it also says there that some believe. And that's amazing to see the hardness of some of the hearts and the fear that Megan talked about. And yet some of them believed. And we believe that that's going to be what's happening here in Berlin. Now, I have to say, too, that one of the more memorable and notable sites in Berlin is this T TV tower. It's called the TV tower. And it's that kind of tall tower on the right there with the ball in the middle. And it's truly, it's huge. It's an interesting piece. It's sort of a wayfinding mark in the city. If you don't know where you're at in Berlin, look for the TV tower and you can kind of find your way there. And they designed it that way on purpose to be really tall and a huge landmark. It's actually the fourth tallest landmark in Berlin, or excuse me, in all of Europe. So, tallest thing in all of Berlin. So they built it in 1965 to broadcast television, but there's also, in that ball there, there's a rotating restaurant, and there's an observation deck. You're up really, really tall, like 1,200 feet. It's really tall up there. What's that? Taller than the arch of the St. Louis Arch, right? Absolutely, it's definitely taller than that. But the architect wanted to demonstrate the dominance of science over the art. That's why they built it so tall, and they wanted to have it be way taller than all the churches and just stand way above. You can see it doing that. It's dwarfing this. That's a Jewish temple, actually, right there, dwarfing all of that. So any church you look at in relation to the TV tower is just tiny in comparison, and they wanted to dwarf that. And so it's interesting that as they did that, this picture was taken just a few blocks from the gallery too there. But if you notice something interesting on that picture on the TV tower, anyone see anything on the TV tower? If you know the answer, you should see. On the right-hand side of the ball, the sun is shining. It's making a cross. And that's an interesting happy coincidence of this tower that they built to say that science trumps religion. And here is this cross shining on the edge of that. And it happens almost any time the sun shines, no matter where you're at, it's on there. And they call that the Pope's revenge. We'll call it God's natural design, right? I guess that all the science that we can muster and remember won't get us to be able to do exactly what we want to do in the way that we want to do it, necessarily, right? The science is just finding out what God has already made. And it's good stuff, but God is over that, even science. Jesus said, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you, you are also to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." And it's just an awesome verse for us to remember, live by we need to love each other as brothers and sisters in Christ, and to look at the world around us and have love for them, not pity or disgust or hate, but love, genuine love for these people. And it's not a new or earth-shattering thought. This is a passage that we've likely read quite a few times, but if there's one takeaway from our time meeting with the Picanatos, hearing their insights, meeting the people, and seeing the city, that this is it. We have to love. We have to love. It's this kind of love for people that will help us to evangelize a post-Christian people. And I know our nation is even turning that direction. They are post-Christian. We've been there, done that. We've tried it. We don't want that anymore, right? So it's not going to be flashy programs. It's not going to be direct mail. It's not going to be any of that stuff. It's going to be love. And so by that, all people will know that you are my disciples, he says. It's if you have love for one another. But that was our thoughts from Berlin. I'm going to ask Don to come up. And for those of you who didn't meet Don yesterday, Don Wiggins is our district superintendent. And I've asked him to come and share a little bit with us about a broader missions perspective. And so he's going to share a little bit about missions in the CMA. So Don, would you come and share with us? Would you like a handheld or can I come to you?
Good to see you here. And I didn't know exactly what I should prepare for you, but I'm going to start with a story, and I have some specific slides that I'll show you about a trip that I just took recently, and just kind of give you an overview of a couple of things. When Dr. A.B. Simpson, founder of the Christian Missionary Alliance, was living in the 1880s in New York City, he became fairly well known in that area for his preaching on the return of Jesus Christ, the second coming of Jesus Christ. And maybe you've heard the story, maybe you have not. It's a true story. A New York newspaper reporter had heard about this and was trying to get a story from Dr. Simpson, like a prediction. When is Jesus going to come back? So he went to him and asked him. And Dr. Simpson said, yes, I will tell you the answer to that question. I will tell you when Jesus is going to come back. But you have to write the answer down exactly as I give it to you. So, and publish it that way in the newspaper. I guess even then they had their own creative ways of reporting what people said. So here's what Dr. Simpson said. He quoted Matthew 24:14. He said, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. And what he said was then, Christ will return when the gospel has been preached to all the nations. And actually, the newspaper reporter put it in the newspaper exactly as he said it. And so it went into the one of the New York newspapers of that era. I tell you that only because missions, the getting of the gospel to all the nations, is connected with bringing a close to this time period in which we live. History is not just going to go on and on and on and on and on and on. We're not just a little blip on some kind of endless spiral or circle of history that just goes around and around and around. There is a beginning point, there's an end point. And the end is going to occur when Christ returns. When Christ sees that the gospel has been taken as a testimony to all the people groups of our world. Jesus said, then the end will come. He left for his disciples then a job, and that is to go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I taught you. That's what he told his disciples. Well, we're doing at this work now nearly 2,000 years. We've been at it a long, long time. The Church of Jesus Christ has been at it a long, long time. How are we doing? Well, we are part of what God is doing in our world today. This Christian Missionary Alliance District, which takes in 99 churches in Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, has sent out and currently has overseas 51 Alliance workers. Mike and Melissa are two of those. And then there are 49 others who are serving, who come from our churches, who are sent out by our funds, prayed for, supported, and encouraged by those funds. So I thought it would be interesting just to put that in its context this morning and then share a little bit with you about some of those workers and the larger fellowship of the Alliance. We have, got to point in that direction. We have five Alliance workers from our district who serve in Taiwan, a little island off the coast of China. Taiwan is sometimes referred to as the Republic of China. China, mainland China, would like it to be part of it and would like to take it back over. And of course, there's some political stuff going on about that even today. As you heard maybe that a phone call went to Donald Trump and all that kind of stuff happened this past week. 20 million people live in an area about the size of Maryland and Delaware, three languages. Less people are Christians on the island of Taiwan than in mainland China on a percentage basis. Maybe as many as 10% of mainland Chinese are believers now. And it depends on your statistics. No one knows. Between 5 and 10%. Only 2.5% in the Republic of China. This is just a couple pictures of the city of Taipei. It is a huge, busy, busy, busy city, as all Asian big cities are. We've traveled. And there are all these motorbikes. I have a couple other pictures of them. People drive these. They drive in between cars, in between lanes. They just whiz all over the place with this and these motorbikes. And you see right over the taxi cabs a 7-Eleven sign. You see that? There are 7-Elevens all over Taiwan, which is kind of interesting. It's a country of mountains down the spine of the country. They grow also rice. And a lot of other products. We saw corn and sugar cane and other things being grown. Well, in the area of Taiwan, there is a heavy emphasis upon Buddhism and Confucianism. And they have temples everywhere. Someone has said that there are more temples and religious sites in Taiwan than anywhere else. And literally, you see these shrines and little temples everywhere you go. Every village has something there that people will worship at, pay to appease their ancestors, or other things like that. Well, we have points of light in Taiwan. There we go. There's one of the points of light. These folks on the right are Americans. They don't happen to be from our district, but they're co-workers with some of our folks who are. And even in Taiwan, you can see it when they have his fingers up behind somebody's head there. You see that? That must be universal, that idea to try to embarrass somebody. But this was one of the groups I visited. And then, let's see. This is Tim and Penny Iverson. Some of you know the Iversons from Staples, Minnesota. I don't know what Tim is doing there. He's kind of leaning into his sign. But they are planting a church, not in Taipei, but in a city about halfway down the island. And I spent a couple days with Tim and Penny. It rained the whole time I was there, by the way. There was not the sun out once in all the time I was there. I had a chance to worship with them on a Sunday and preach in their little church. Every church in Taiwan is small. There are no large churches, no mega churches like we have in America. So this whole group, if I went all the way across the room, you'd see about 25 or 30 people. But they love Jesus, and they're attempting to minister his love. And they have their own little kids' sermon, and kids sing. Tim just gets down on the floor and sings some songs with them, and that's just part of their regular Sunday worship. This is the second point of light in Taipei. The building that is the second from the right, that has the black sign across the front, it says Aroma Cafe, and there it is. Proof that it was raining, by the way. There's their little logo, and that is the home of another ministry that's going on. It's a coffee shop on the first floor and a church building on the second floor. And it is operated by Chris and Jamie Odell and Jesse Wagner, all of whom are from our district. And they have, on Sundays, two services, one in the afternoon and one in the evening, separated by about 3 or 4 hours. That just accommodates the culture and the comings and goings. The average age of their congregation is 35. They're ministering to millennials and the next generation. So there's Jamie on the left, Chris on the right. If I said Jamie and Chris, you wouldn't know who was who, so I just made sure I got my left and right in there. She's from Now Then, he's from Chaska, Minnesota. Then Jesse is from Elk River. So they're all from our district. They're all people that God called out of our churches to go and serve in Taiwan. They meet upstairs on Sundays. I was able to attend a service. It's both English and in Taiwanese. And it's an interesting arrangement. It's a long, narrow floor, so you have to have chairs at odd angles all over the place to accommodate people. And there's a stairway right there on the left. So a couple times during the service, somebody comes tracing up the stairs right in front of everybody. So you did have to just kind of concentrate and keep going. No air conditioning. It was pretty muggy and sticky there, as you can imagine. But you can see there's lots of young people there. There's also some American workers who are interns who are working with the Odells who are attending that particular service. There. Well, what happened? I hit something wrong there. Can you get me back to my presentation? That's not mine. Okay, thank you. There we go. This is a picture I took at a restaurant. I just had to take this picture. It's symbolism. To me, it's the open window of time that we have to get the gospel into that country. It's not unlikely that island will someday be taken over by China. It's quite likely that it will be. And the gates will come down. The American missionaries will have to leave. In fact, many of them have already left, seeing this coming. But there's a window of opportunity to get the gospel into Taiwan. And so if you think about this window and you think about Taiwan, it can cause us to pray. So I was there for several days and then went on to what's called the AWF, the Alliance World Fellowship, which meets every 4 years. It met in Bangkok this year. I was one of our delegates from the United States. While I was there, the king of Thailand died. Maybe you heard about that in the news. King died. And the country went into 30 days of mourning. And but I will tell you this, it did not stop the traffic. When I took my taxi ride from the airport to my hotel, it was a 10-mile trip. It took an hour, and the first 10 minutes or 15 minutes were getting to the exit, so 9 miles to the exit from the airport took about 15 minutes, and then the other 45 minutes was the last mile. I could have walked it three times in the time it took to take the taxi the last mile to my hotel. The traffic is just unbelievable. The streets weren't built for the numbers of taxis and pedicabs and buses and everything else that run there. It's just an incredibly large, large, busy city. But I wasn't there to see the city as much as I was to observe and participate in the Alliance World Fellowship. There are Christian Missionary Alliance-related churches in 80 nations of the world who cooperate together in Great Commission completion. These are not run by the U.S. church. These are national churches with national indigenous leaders who have arisen over the years to take leadership. And here's just a picture of that convocation. If you could see that picture real clearly, you'd see that there are folks from all sorts of nations, all sorts of languages. Here was our main speaker, Sundar Krishnan, who is an Indian pastoring an Alliance Church in Canada, speaking in English. All right. His translator is to his right, was a Congolese from Central Africa who was translating everything he said into French. In the back were five booths, sound booths, and inside those sound booths there were five people translating everything that was being said into another language. Some into Spanish, into Chinese, Indonesian, Thai. I don't know what the other language was, but there were five constantly being translated. So it was very interesting. Everything was bilingual. It was in English and French, and then there were the other translations going on. It was a little taste of heaven to be there with all these folks from all over the world. And the factoids that I brought back with me, just a few quick things. In 2016, there was a leadership transition from a European president, whose name is Ari Van Dine, to a Brazilian president, the first Latin president of the Alliance World Fellowship. And here's the prayer of dedication. The Dutchman on the left and the Brazilian on the right being prayed for as the leadership of time was passed from one to the other. This was not dominated by Americans, North Americans. We were a very, very small minority in the group. And the incredible leadership that has been raised up over the years is just amazing. I can tell you some stories. But here are a couple of other factoids in the interest of time that I learned while I was there. There's an Alliance church in Mufraq, Jordan, northern Jordan near the Syrian border, that has served hundreds and hundreds of Syrian refugees that streamed across the border for safety. Long before the United Nations arrived, this church was doing the job of showing compassion to these refugees from Syria. Some of them have gone to Berlin as well, but they're going all over the world trying to get out of their country as it's being torn apart by war. There are a dozen Alliance churches in war-torn Syria. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Including in the city of Aleppo, which is now being it's under heavy attack. Pastor Noor, I was able to meet him and talk with him. I got his picture. He let me take his picture and bring it back so that you could at least see him. Wonderful, gentle, kind brother. His family, he just calmly talks about this. Yes, we had to leave for 2 years because our whole neighborhood was being bombed. And my family's now been able to go back to live in the home. And yes, the believers, some are still there. Some are refugees. We don't even know where some of our people are. But we're carrying on with the gospel in Aleppo, Syria. I mean, just says that like it's everyday business. And yet, what a gentle, kind brother this man was, just to meet him and talk with him. I'll bet you didn't know this. There are 62 Christian Missionary Alliance churches in Cuba. This was just discovered. There've been some of them have been sort of undercover And now with the new relationship, it can be broadcast. They're the newest Alliance World Fellowship member, 62 new churches in Cuba. So when we hear these political stories and you hear the politics of what's going on around the world, there's another way to look at the world, and that's through the lens of the gospel and the lens of the Great Commission. And I think that's how we as believers need to look at our world, not just through the lens of politics and policies of our country. In the nation of Congo, that great big country that used to be called Zaire, the CNMA has 1.5 million members in their churches. It is 3 times the size of the United States CNMA. I was just blown away. This was A.B. Simpson's first sending destination for Alliance missionaries way back in the late 1880s, 1890s. And there were more graves at one time than there were living missionaries because of the diseases. And more than 25 national churches of those 80 are sending and supporting their own missionaries today. So we don't do that, they do that. This brother, two last pictures, this brother, his name is Layden Manang or something like that. Layden is 80 years old. His parents were trained by Robert Jaffrey, R.A. Jaffrey. Some of you might know that name. He was a Canadian, very well known in Canada. His father ran one of the big newspapers in Toronto. He left all of that fortune to go to Southeast Asia and was in various countries of Southeast Asia through even World War II. And Layden's parents were trained and taught by him in a Bible school that Jaffrey started. Here he is, an 80-year-old man. He's at the Alliance World Fellowship with people from Indonesia as a delegate. And I got a chance to talk with him, and I said, can I get your picture? It's kind of a link with some amazing history of a missionary pioneer. He said, sure. And so that's Layden. Four ways to engage personally for all of us. One is to pray. Pastor shared some prayer requests from Mike and Alyssa. We were there with them back in April of last year. We can partner with them by engaging with them in various practical ways. We can continue to send our missionaries, and we can go. There are some, maybe even in this room, who knows, today, that God will call and send to take up the task of crossing a cultural barrier, learning a language, going to another country. And not everybody's called to do that, but some are. And so who will respond? Who will say yes to that? The Bridge joins 97 other Alliance churches in these 3 states, sending and supporting 51 of the 700 CNMA international workers, just from our district, 51 of them. And so we have a responsibility. The latest ones that went to Mongolia, and so we've got them all over the world, literally. I want to encourage you with this statistic. In 2015, the people of our 98 churches gave $2.3 million to Alliance ministries, international ministries. It was an all-time record. We're almost at the point, we can say this, I think, I can say it, that we have been now for 2 years giving an amount equivalent to the full support of all those who depend entirely on that funding. There are some that raise some of their, a little bit of their support, or their bivocational workers or whatever, but all the people who need all their funding to come from us are funded by our churches now. But we have more people going, and so we're going to have to keep ramping this up as time goes on. So when you give to the Great Commission Fund, you're helping to support Mike and Alyssa Picanato. They don't have to go out and individually raise their support. They're paid for through the Great Commission Fund that we contribute to. So that's the connect. That's how that works. And then they're able to have their needs taken care of. Okay. Well, maybe I'll just let it go at that. There might be one more that we won't worry about it in the interest of time. Can I just pray for us in that regard? And then are you going to come and talk about the Great Commission Fund? Okay. Lord, thank you for the work that you are doing all over the world. We just had a little taste of it today from Germany and from Taiwan and Thailand and few places where we're at work in our just our friends and our co-workers, and I pray, Lord, that you will strengthen each one of those today who might be facing a real spiritual battle, really seeing the darkness close up of error and confusion, how the God of this age has blinded their eyes to the light of the gospel. And I would pray, Lord, that you will pour in into our workers faith, and that you will pour out through them the word of God, the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ, so that all will hear and many will come to a saving knowledge of Christ. And bless this church as it seeks to partner in Germany and as it makes its contribution to your great work, Lord, that's going on all around the world. We pray for that in Jesus' strong name. Amen.